or navy, with a white shirt and a burgundy tie, all under a trench coat that announced the presence of an agent or a cop of some variety. Coach Kyle happened to see the man when he entered the gym, and he thought to himself that the guy was out of place. Probably a detective of some sort, maybe a narc looking for a dealer. It would not be the first arrest in or around the gym. After the agent cop leaned against the bleachers, he cast a long, suspicious look at the Red Knight's bench, and his eyes seemed to settle on Coach Kyle, who returned the stare for a second before it became uncomfortable. Marcus let one fly from near mid-court, air ball, and Coach Kyle jumped to his feet, spread his hands wide, shook his head as if to ask, "Why?" Marcus ignored him as he loafed back on defense. A dumb foul stopped the clock and prolonged the misery. While looking at the free throw shooter, Kyle glanced beyond him, and in the background was the agent cop, still staring, not at the action, but at the coach. For a 25-year-old law student with no criminal record and no illegal habits or proclivities, the presence and the attention of a man who gave all indications of being employed by some branch of law enforcement should have caused no concern whatsoever. But it never worked that way with Kyle McAvoy. Street cops and state troopers didn't particularly bother him. They were paid to simply react. But the guys in dark suits, the investigators and agents, the ones trained to dig deep and discover secrets, those types still unnerved him. 30 seconds to go, and Marcus was arguing with a referee. He'd thrown an F-bomb at a ref 2 weeks earlier and was suspended for a game. Coach Kyle yelled at his star, who never listened. He quickly scanned the gym to see if Agent Cop Number 1 was alone or was now accompanied by Agent Cop Number 2. No, he was not. Another dumb foul, and Kyle yelled at the referee to just let it slide. He sat down and ran his finger over the side of his neck, then flicked off the perspiration. It was early February, and the gym was, as always, quite chilly. Why was he sweating? The agent cop hadn't moved an inch. In fact, he seemed to enjoy staring at Kyle. The decrepit old horn finally squawked. The game was mercifully over. One team cheered, and one team really didn't care. Both lined up for the obligatory high fives and good game, as meaningless to 12-year-olds as it is to college players. As Kyle congratulated the opposing coach, he glanced down the court. The white man was gone. What were the odds he was waiting outside? Of course it was paranoia, but paranoia had settled into Kyle's life so long ago that he now simply acknowledged it, coped with it, and moved on. The Red Knights regrouped in the visitors' locker room, a cramped little space under the sagging and permanent stands on the home side. There, Coach Kyle said all the right things. Nice effort. Good hustle. Our game is improving in certain areas. Let's finish on a high note this Saturday. The boys were changing clothes and hardly listening. They were tired of basketball because they were tired of losing, and of course, all blame was heaped upon the coach. He was too young, too white, too much of an Ivy Leaguer. The few parents who were there waited outside the locker room, and it was those tense moments when the team came out that Kyle hated most about his community service. There would be the usual complaints about playing time. Marcus had an uncle, a 22-year-old former All-State player with a big mouth and a fondness for bitching about Coach Kyle's unfair treatment of the best player in the league. From the locker room, there was another door that led to a dark, narrow hallway that ran behind the home stands and finally gave way to an outside door that opened into an alley. Kyle was not the first coach to discover this escape route, and on this night he wanted to avoid not only the families and their complaints, but also the agent cop. He said a quick goodbye to his boys, and as they fled the locker room, he made his escape. In a matter of seconds, he was outside in the alley, then walking quickly along a frozen sidewalk. Heavy snow had been plowed, and the sidewalk was icy and barely passable. The temperature was somewhere far below freezing. It was 8:30 on a Wednesday, and he was headed for the law journal offices at the Yale Law School, where he would work until midnight at least. He didn't make it. The agent was leaning against the fender of a red Jeep Cherokee that was parked parallel on the street. The vehicle was titled to one John McAvoy of York, Pennsylvania.